welcome, everybody. We have a fantastic show tonight. This guy, he's got so many great stories and experience, and he's a great guy, a good friend. Welcome to the show, Bruce Howard. How are you, buddy?
Tino, thank you for having me on your show. It's a great opportunity. Been looking forward to it ever since we made the deal about a month ago. And
that's great.
Forward to saying hi to everybody.
That's cool. Now, we had dinner the other night, and we were on the phone, and you're like, hey, look, let's have dinner, you know, at the casino, and the steakhouse is closed, but let's have dinner at the buffet. And so when I hung up, I'm like, wow, we want to have dinner at the buffet. And, you know, buffets, whatever, you know. So I came up, and we had dinner, and I had one of the best meals. You had lobster, you had spare ribs, you had rapini, which most places don't even have, and I love rapini. You had so many choices, and I don't even want to talk about the pecan pie. It was out of this world. The only regret I have was that I didn't take one with me. It was absolutely amazing.
Well, we've made our mark here as the best food casino in all of California, besides a very dynamic casino floor with a little better chance for everybody to win. But the buffet has been our calling card, really, ever since I got here, having grown up in the food and beverage world. When I arrived in 2003, it looked like the market was in need of a little higher grade of food. And where better to do it in a market dominated by slot players than in your buffet? But it's an amazing story, that buffet. We serve almost a million people a year under one
roof.
We're the single biggest users of lobsters in the country under one roof. Red lobster for the whole country is number one, but we believe in a lobster buffet every night. Most places do it one or two nights a week. We have the lobster buffet 7 nights a week. Any night you want to come, you get the best of the best.
Yeah, I had and the tails are a little smaller, so you can actually take them out and not feel like you have to go in there. And they had some with different spices. It was absolutely fantastic. Now, talking about food, you got started at a very famous brand in Florida, the Sea Shanty, and you guys had the freshest fish, right? The food was like the beginning of the career.
Yes, sir. Right out of college from the University of Florida, my friend was opening up all these restaurants in Miami. Anybody familiar with the Sea Shanty in the late 70s, early 80s would know our 6 restaurants. It was covering about an 80-mile span, from North Pompano Beach all the way south to Coral Gables, with stores along the way, North Miami Beach and a few other spots. And we were open from 4 to 10 every night, and the guests would literally line up at 2 p.m. and wait in line 2 hours to get what was the freshest food. Back then, doing 2,000 covers a night under one roof was quite a task, but we had a phenomenal operation. Went to Boston to buy our lobsters, went down to the boats to buy our fish, and anybody who grew up in Miami Beach or North Miami would know the Sea Shanty. It was a fun experience for sure.
What did you learn during those years at the restaurant?
Don't fool the public. They're smarter than all of us. I believe they know what they want. Get a business that appeals to a lot of people. Get a business where there's enough of a variety where people can come once, twice, 3 times a week. We had people come 7 days a week. A lot of the retired North Miami, don't have a kitchen. They use the Sea Shanty as their kitchen. So I learned, just like the casino business, great food, great value, a chance to get them back as often as we can is the key to any business, really.
Yeah, I mean, the food, you know, the food is important. I know myself, if I have a good meal, no matter where I am, I feel great. I feel satisfied. I can hang out with my friends. It's got to be the food and the experience, right?
Absolutely. And then it just got reinforced when I was fortunate enough to head out to Las Vegas after the restaurants were sold and landed a job at what I'd still call the Harvard of casinos, the ultimate, to be able to work at Caesar's Palace from 1985 to 95 for folks like Mr. Lanny and Mr. Reichardt.
Yeah, tell us about Mr.
Lanny.
You still,
Henry Gluck.
You still call him
the best.
You still call him Mr. Lanny, right?
Yeah, Mr. Lanny was our boss, the COO, and just the lifeblood of the whole place, and just the nicest man. Yeah, I know some people call him Terry, and I guess now that I'm 60, I should, but I think all of us who grew up there still refer to him as Mr. Lanny. He passed away, unfortunately, quite a few years ago now, but I know his wife, Debbie. The kids basically grew up at Caesar's Palace. The family lived in California, but Mr. Lanny was there at least a week or two every month, and just the classiest person, I believe, that I've ever had the opportunity to work alongside, without a doubt.
Now, he said he had some interesting philosophies. I know he used to get his staff in a room and kind of give them these philosophies that were really short and easy to understand. And that stayed with you, right? Like, give us a couple.
Absolutely. He always reinforced to us that it's all about the guests. It's all about your teammates. This is not a very complicated business. And a saying I've used in the 8 different casino markets that I've been able to have an opportunity in, Mr. Lanny always said, it's not a complicated business. It's just about cleanliness and friendliness. Whoever's the cleanest, whoever's the friendliest will win at the end of the day. As the assistant director of food and beverage, basically the number 2 person in the department of 1,200, he would really never talk business with me. He would always ask, Bruce, how's your family? Are the guests happy? What else do we need to help the food and beverage department? He was just one of those people that ran the greatest gaming company in the world, but just what we all aspire to as leaders. The epitome of approachability, friendliness. I think he really understood the whole gaming environment, how important it is socially. I know he was a horse racing fan, and he just understood, I think, the social significance of gaming, and he brought it to life at Caesar's Palace. And everybody that worked there was thrilled to work there. There wasn't one of us out of, I think it was 3,000 back then, whoever had a bad day. Whenever Mr. Lanny, Mr. Gluck, Mr. Reichardt's, Majori, McKenna, whenever they were around, everybody was in a good mood. Win, lose, or draw. Everybody was happy. We never sweated the money. We just did whatever we had to do to bring them back. And at the end of the day, it was a great success. And it was probably the best 10 years I've had in gaming, other than until I got to San Diego. So my 6,000...
That's
They're
great.
All great, but the first one and the last one are my 2 favorites.
He had something that he used to tell people about rich people, and it was the premise that he built Caesar's Palace on.
Yes, interesting enough, and I don't know if too many people remember this, but I was in a meeting with him one day, or he was doing an interview, and somebody asked him, Mr. Lanny, in 1966, Caesar's was such a step or two above everything else, at a cost, I believe, then of roughly $50 million, which would probably be like $5 billion today. So he was asked, why was Caesar's Palace created, and why did the Perlman brothers and yourself and Mr. Gluck build Caesar's Palace? And he said, Bruce, it's really pretty easy. Rich people want to hang out with rich people, and poor people want to hang out with rich people, and everybody feels rich when they walk into Caesar's Palace. And that's what he taught.
I love that. That's really fantastic. I love that one. Now, the biggest thing back then was boxing. You told me that when the boxing happened, all of the high rollers in the world were there. Tell us a little bit about what was that. What was it like, and who were some of the biggest draws?
Yeah, I know it's spread around town now between Mandalay Bay and MGM and the new arena there, but That outdoor arena at Caesar's Palace on fight night was unlike anything else. As the one really in charge of the fight nights from a food and beverage standpoint, we'd spend all week setting up bars and food outlets and all that. And then we get to watch the fight, whether it was probably the best fight I ever saw, Tommy Hearns and Marvin Hagler. Back in 1985, what's thought of now as the greatest 3 rounds of boxing, toe-to-toe,
Yep.
To the Fan yep. Man fight that I just saw in the paper celebrated its 25th anniversary. I believe it was November 6th of 93 where the parachutists came into the ring to all the Sugar Ray Leonard fights. That middleweight division, Hagler, Leonard, Hearns, was just electric. I know, I'm sorry, we didn't have Mayweather back then. I guess he's the closest thing now. But every high roller around the world wanted one of those 1,200 rooms back now. I think Caesars might have 3,500 now. We had 1,200 rooms, and you needed a big credit line, and there wasn't one person who wasn't comped into the entire casino. There wasn't one cash-paying guest in our rooms on those fight nights. And the jewelry and the money that was flowing around that casino, I mean, I'm just a kid, 28 back then in 85, that was just in awe of all this. But we saw all the big ones. It was fantastic.
And you were telling me that there was anybody could have anything. There was no holds bar, whatever you wanted, right? Caviar, Cristal, whatever it was.
That's correct. Most hotels now, and even at Caesars, when a high roller comes in and they start ordering, you call a host and you get the approvals. Well, on those fight weekends, it was no holds barred. Everybody was too busy, and Caesars really, I think, invented room service, found out the importance of when they're happy in their rooms, they don't go next door, they don't go anywhere. If they're not in the casino, they're in their room. But we're talking a cases of Cristal and pounds of caviar, not ounces, and just the best of the best. Everybody's probably heard of Louis XIII, which back then was about
yeah.
2 bottles. But when we brought it to a room, it was a case. It was 6 bottles. It wasn't 1 bottle. So by the time you bring the champagne, it was nothing to have a $20,000 room service order on fight weekend. Nothing.
Unbelievable.
Yeah, it was.
Tell us about the foreign shops, because you opened the foreign shops and you had an interesting food challenge, right?
Yes, probably one of the bigger parties we ever did. Obviously, as one of the heads of food and beverage at Caesars, we were in charge of the opening night at the Forum Shops, which I believe back then opened with about 140 stores. So the mandate for us was to basically put some type of buffet in front of each outlet, or I believe it was 10,000 guests that were given $10,000 or $20,000 each on the grand opening before the night it opened to the public. So one store would have caviar and champagne, then another one would have all the fancy desserts, then in front of another store would be the cold canapés and all the accoutrements with that. Then in front of another one, we'd be carving filet mignon or prime rib. So the good news is it wasn't open, and we had a month to set up the store. So it took about a month. We set up the 150 buffets, and it was a unique challenge that I'll never forget. And I think I told you, oddly enough or funny enough, like for weeks later, dress shop owners and shop owners around the forum would call me up and said, Bruce, we found another champagne glass in our dressing room. So for weeks, we were getting back our china and our glassware from that one party, because that's the only party we ever did there. So you talk about the who's who of the retail world. That was it. I think it's still one of the top 5 per square foot grossing retail centers on earth. I mean, 1990,
oh, absolutely. There's no question about it. It's number one in the United States, for sure.
And that's
no question.
Whatever, 25 to 30 years later. I think it opened around 1990,
yeah,
right about when the Mirage opened.
Yeah, no question. Who were some of the biggest acts that drew the most, and who were some of the best people that you interacted with back then, the stars?
Caesars back then had like a core group of 5 or 6 that came every quarter or so. Joan Rivers, Diana Ross, Julio Iglesias, Rodney Dangerfield. Julio was probably the biggest gentleman, or the most respectful, kind gentleman. Oddly enough, his waiter, Cleto Escobedo, you will see on the Jimmy Kimmel Show. Cleto's son is the band director, and Cleto, who was the most sought-after waiter, who waited on Julio, Diana Ross, Joan Rivers, is the saxophone player. So if anybody turns on Jimmy Kimmel and you see the father and son running the band, the father is a good friend of who was a 20 or 25-year room service server. So you talk about a hard worker, old school, salt of the earth kind of guy. The saxophone player on Jimmy Kimmel was it. But all the stars had carte blanche. My first couple years there, we had Paul Anka. And then in between that, as the years went on, then we would intersperse shows like Chicago and other types of shows in between. But we always had our core group of those five or six that we all got to know well. And they were just good, hardworking people. Then we had things like so many movies over there. I think I talked to you about The Rain Man. The Rain Man
movie. Oh, yeah, that's right. Rain Man. Yeah, Tom Cruise and Dustin Hoffman.
I mean, you talk about two professionals, Tom Cruise and Dustin Hoffman. I think from the start of the production to maybe everybody finished up was almost like 6 months, and I think Caesars had about 20 minutes in the movie. But Tom Cruise and Dustin Hoffman, 100% gentlemen, stayed in their rooms all day studying their scripts. I mean, you talk about two professional actors. They very rarely came out. They were always in character. You never really saw them walking around much, but we were all invited to the shoots, and I have enormous respect for those two. I mean, the epitome of professionalism. There were some other movies, a few before I got there. Rain Man was the biggest one I was ever involved with, and that was just a great experience. The producers, directors could not have been nicer. They used a lot of Caesars team members, the dealer that's in that famous shot when Tom Cruise is winning all the money. He was a 30-year dealer, so they were kind to all of us. Everybody was first class. We had the Jerry Lewis telethon for 10, 15 years, Ed McMahon, Jerry Lewis. Well, you get to know these folks. They come every year. I mean, just pure gentlemen. They were all, I felt lucky to be at Caesars. Everybody wanted to be at Caesars at that time.
Yeah, he even had Evel Knievel. He tried to jump the fountain, right? He made it, but didn't go too well for him after
the
that.
The father,
right?
Before my time in the late 60s, made it, but I believe he fell over the handlebars. We had Robbie, the son.
Uh-huh.
Who did have a clean jump. I'm going to say probably 88 or 89.
Oh, we were out there. He had a clean jump. That's cool.
He had a clean jump, perfectly clean. His father was a legend at Caesars a little before my time, but the father and son were always welcome. I mean, the father would still come around later on, and I believe he was there the night Robbie jumped. And yeah, Caesars was always full of respectful people, and again, I think Mr. Lanny set a tone that if you're going to perform or you're going to do something at this place, you're going to be nice to our people. We're going to be nice to you. Just
right.
At a little higher level of all that maybe is missing a little bit now.
Yeah, I see. He set the tone.
He set the tone for sure, and we all followed it, and we all are better for it. There's got to be 500 people from those days who have gone on to great careers. And there's many people why, but between Mr. Lanny, Gluck, Armini, Reichardt, Maggiore, and McKinnon, those are probably the six that had the biggest influence on my career.
Yeah, legends. Bruce, I'm gonna name some stars and athletes, and you're gonna tell me what they ate because you fed them, right?
Everybody has to start with the beverage director because everybody's got a special diet. So, yeah, we used to associate different people, and I should be able to remember most of them. So, yeah, go ahead.
Okay. I'm going to start. Tommy Hearns, he was a big foodie, right? He stayed in his room 2 weeks after the fight. What did he eat?
Tommy Hearns, again, all those fighters and incredibly regimented and incredibly disciplined leading up to the fight. Where literally they like count calorie by calorie. So the epitome of the shape, then most would stay a day or two or leave, but Tommy liked to stay a week or two and liked to eat what all our guests liked to eat. He liked corned beef and pastrami and the matzo ball soup and the Yeah, he would hang around, probably gain 20, 30 pounds. Then you'd see him again at the end of the year, back to his fighting weight, fit as a fiddle. But, yeah, I think he kind of let it go for the 2 weeks after. And it was all that rich food back then that we all like at the deli. He liked all the deli food.
The deli food, yeah, that's great food. How about Hagler?
Hagler was a little stricter and mostly meat. He'd go with the protein.
Yeah, the protein.
Steaks, prime rib, you know, very little starch, no bread. A little bit quieter, not as flamboyant as Tommy and Sugar Ray Leonard. They were the two flamboyant ones. But Marvin, again, you know, he'd come down with the promoter and with his trainer, and they'd walk in my office and just tell me what they need while they're here. And we'd write it all down. And again, I can't tell you how respectful all these athletes and entertainers were. I mean, they were just a cut above, and I think everybody felt happy, I guess, like Mayweather does now. I believe he only fights at MGM. Those guys would only fight at Caesars. So similar circumstance.
Julio Iglesias.
Julio Iglesias, and again, it's not because it was for free, but Julio Iglesias, just about every meal, had a pound of caviar and some fancy champagne. He always liked walking our wine room because he was known back then as the biggest wine connoisseur in a private restaurant. So he would always compare his wine list to our wine list. But he would eat a tin of caviar like you and I would eat a bowl of soup. We just bring him this tin of caviar, not ounce of 16 ounces. He'd sit down, pop the lid, open up a bottle of Cristal Rosé, and just have a snack. That was his snack. So while, you know, we might snack on peanut butter and jelly, he's got like a $2,000 snack.
That's amazing.
Yeah, great
guy. Unbelievable.
He was a great guy.
Yeah, you were telling me. Really cool dude, eh? Yeah.
Julio is fantastic.
Bruce, I was in your office, and I saw something. I saw a few things, but you have, for every casino, they give you this framed picture with all the signatures of your friends and coworkers and, you know, with little quotes. And the one that stuck out to me was the Caesars one, although the signatures have faded because they didn't have Sharpies back then. What the ad, and I don't think a lot of people have seen this, but it's basically a shot of the front fountain, and perfectly centered over the fountain, it reads, "Leave the world behind." Did Caesars define that, and is that the key to our business?
Back then, that was kind of an internal saying amongst some of us that these people have waited their whole lives to get here, and our job is to create a fantasy land. I think it was Steve Wynn who coined the whole gaming phrase of an adult Disney World. So Caesars was just a place where we wanted you to come, and whatever troubles you may have had, leave them at the airport, get in our limo, and head back to the airport 4 days later, basically leaving your world behind, and let us do for you what you've been doing for us. You know, we had military people, we had all different walks of life, a lot of doctors, attorneys. So our job was to create a fantasy for them that they would talk about for the rest of the year. I mean, Caesars then, or on average, I think Las Vegas saw people 1.5 or 2 times a year versus some of the casinos I've worked at since that we see people 2-3 times a month. So we all knew they had waited a year to get there, and our job was to allow them the opportunity to leave their world behind and just give them an experience that they will talk about for the rest of the year. It's amazing how many people booked their trips next year when they were leaving that year. And that was always a good sign to us that we did something right. So there was so much repeat business and so many people who could stay anywhere in the world. You know, now everybody can afford to take the high rollers. Back then, Caesars was unique because we had so many of them. And as you know, a lot of high rollers win all the time. So if we'd have 100 in for the fight weekend with million-dollar credit lines, 55 might lose, 45 might win, and it works out okay. If you only have 3 or 4 high rollers, you're really taking a big risk. So Caesars was all about the best players, the most we could get. But even then, when it wasn't fight week, somebody from Iowa or Illinois or wherever wants to stay with us, we're going to make it memorable. We're going to do whatever we can to make it memorable, and I've tried to do that everywhere I've been.
Yeah, that's the key, right? That's the key to everything. Bruce, you have quite a few interesting sayings, and, you know, your dad taught you that don't be jealous, don't be greedy, you'll live a good life. But then there's the 3 out of 4 rule. Tell me a little bit about that.
My father was awesome, and he taught his 3 sons and 1 daughter, and we've lived it our whole lives. None of my brothers or sisters have ever been jealous or greedy. I've never been. I'm thrilled with everybody in my life and what I've had the opportunity to do. When I talk about always trying to satisfy 3 out of 4, I talk about the 4 groups of people that are important to me, which would always be the guests, number 1, the team members, the owners of the company, and the investors who have given us here at Valley View $250 million of their investors' hard-earned money. So I try to make sure in every decision that we make that at least 3 of those 4 groups are made happy. It's hard sometimes to get all 4 happy in all the various decisions we have to make. But we try hard here. If we're not making at least 3 out of those 4 happy, then we'd probably go back to the drawing board and figure out a better answer. So, and it can be 3 of the 4 different every time. Sometimes we'll make a decision that's good for guests and team members, and the owners may not be great for the investors. Sometimes we'll make the investors and the team members and the owners happy, and maybe the guests have to, coming forth that time. But sometimes we can do all 4. Like when we made the buffet 7 nights a week. That's a good example. Sounded like it may not be good for everybody. It was expensive, but when we got here in 2003, we looked around for a year and said, why should we only do this on Friday nights? That doesn't make sense. So
no.
We are the only ones, I believe, who serves the full-fledged, what people call seafood nights, lobster nights, 7 nights a week. And that turned out to be a win-win. The guests are happy. Come any night you want. The team members are happy. They make money every night. The owners are happy. It doubled our business. And the investors are happy because the EBITDA numbers went up and they got paid and have never not been paid and will always be paid back their loans. So that's probably a good example of things we do here. When when we brought up the idea of every night lobster, obviously you're going to get some critics. Can we afford it? Yes. The answer is yes. And now we're the only ones that I know of where you can get lobster Monday through Sunday.
It's great. I had it. It was fantastic. Bruce, you've been married 36 years. Your wife comes from a family of 16. And I love this saying, every day's a comp. Talk about the importance of family and how to balance your life in a 24-hour industry.
Well, when you grow up with the baby of 16 children, you learn all about someone who's really appreciative for every day. We now have her oldest sister, who was the number 2 child, living with us for the last 15 years, and these 2 women are quite remarkable. There's only 1 other sister and 1 other brother left, so I'm living with a wife and her sister who have buried 12 siblings, which is not easy to go through. But Marion and Irene are 2 of the best, and they look forward to waking up every day. They both have had illness in their life, and they've come through it, and it wasn't easy growing up with a home of 18 people with 2 bedrooms. So they were through the tough times in Hoboken. Marion grew up in the food and beverage business with me, so she appreciates what I can do. She says, it's all good. Just send me a text sometime what time you'll be home. Do what you got to do whenever I get home. I know people may not believe this, but my wife gets up from the couch and gives me a standing ovation and a clap and a glad you're home. And then we go have dinner. So my life's
That's
pretty
great.
Easy. She's a very unique woman.
I love that. I love that. And you have grandkids and it's all good. What can you say to the young generation coming up in this business? What do they need to know?
I would say it's not all about analytics, and it's not all about the feel of the business that we grew up with. You have to learn the balance of how to use the analytics and how to use, you know, your God-given senses of what's the right thing to do for your team members, what's the best way to get a little edge on the competitors. And I think sometimes I see some casinos go to the extremes of analytics. We have a lot of analytics. I grew up on the business side at the University of Florida with a lot of stats and finance classes, so I understand it. But it's not going to win at the end of the day, because the analytics would say, don't do lobster every night. That's what they would say. But
having been in
all different parts of the country and watching different markets, you have to learn the mix. And you have to learn what's important to the guests, not necessarily what's so important to you, what's important to them, and what would make them come to this beautiful Valley View Casino in small Valley Center, California, more often than right down the street. The number one gaming company in the world, the largest, Harrah's, is our number one competitor. But we compete toe-to-toe. We're one of one. I believe Harrah's has now 40 or 42 casinos, and we're big on personal service. We're big on everybody being on the floor. I know it's an old concept, and a lot of companies want you in front of a computer all day. That's not our MO. That's just not what we believe in. We connect with our team members and guests, and the idea is a balance of analytics and a balance of what makes good sense.
And cleanliness and friendliness.
Cleanliness and friendliness. Mr. Lanny's favorite saying that we use all the time, and he's right. He was right then, and he's right now. Who's
and
the cleanest
right
and the friendliest? Obviously, you need everything else, but if you can get a company committed to cleanliness and friendliness, you will do fine.
This has been great. Bruce, let's take some calls. We got quite a few calls lined up here, and I'm sure people are very excited to talk to you. Hello, this is Tino Magnetta. I have Bruce Howard. Do you have a question for Bruce?
Yeah. Hi, Tino. Hi, Bruce. Thanks for having me on the show. It's been great listening to all the stories that you've been sharing. You had talked about one of the strange things that had happened with the parachutist coming into the boxing ring. I remember seeing that on TV. That was pretty crazy. One thing I was thinking about, I have a couple questions, and you can answer them after I'm all done. I'll pop off and listen on the air. But what is the strangest request that you've received from a guest? And then also, what is the proudest moment of your career? Thank you for answering.
Great questions. I got to go back to Caesar's Palace again for the request, because most people have seen Rain Man, and they may have heard of the Rain Man Suite, which before Rain Man, they were known as the 16 Suites to those of us at Caesar's, all these two-story suites that basically started on the 69th floor, and they would all end in 16. So they were all numbered with odd numbers because the second floor, the even number, was upstairs. So 69, 16, 71, 16. The Rain Man suite is one away from the top. That was 83, 16. So it would also include 84, 16, and that was one away from the top one. I guess the producers or directors didn't want to be on the roof. There was an 85 and 86. So in all these suites were these gigantic jacuzzis in the middle of the room, which, you know, back then was unheard of. You're taking a bath in the middle of your bedroom, looking out down the strip and watching the TVs. And we had some of the absolute strangest requests what to put in those jacuzzis. So we did like 500 pounds of jelly beans. Then we had a guy who was a farmer, a peanut farmer. So we shipped in all these bags of peanuts, and we filled the jacuzzi with peanuts. But without a doubt, the strangest one was a high roller who ordered, I believe, 10 cases of Dom Perignon. And he said, if you don't mind, I'd like to have it brought up with four waiters. Okay, sure. 10 cases of Dom Perignon is a huge order. And what we did when we got up there, our room service team, and I was there and saw it, and as hard as this is to believe, he says, here was what I want you to do, Bruce. I lost so much money here, and I'm so not happy about it. I want you to open up those 10 cases of Dom Perignon and pour it down the drain in this jacuzzi tub. because I want to get a little of my. So we then proceeded to open 10 cases, 120 bottles of Dom Perignon, and literally pour it down the drain. That was the strangest by far, and you had to be there to believe it. And you sure you want to do this? Or do you want one bottle? No, I want it all poured down the drain.
That's hilarious.
Most significant, proud moment in my career, I'm going to go back to probably one of the, or probably the saddest day in American history. Following 2001 was a big layoff up and down the strip. I happened to be a vice president at that time at the Aladdin. And we have been pretty frugal and conservative in our hiring practices. So while some strip properties, I think, went as high as 30 to 40% layoffs throughout the company, we were only asked to do 10 to 20%, depending on the department, which, again, was a lot. I believe almost 40,000 people were laid off at that time. For those of you around, I believe it was 2001. When McCarran Airport closed and there wasn't a noise outside for 3 or 4 days, it was the spookiest town we had ever been in. But anyway, now it came my turn, and I had about 100 leaders. It was all supervisors, managers, and just in food and beverage, I had about 100 of those. And I had to tell 10 or 15 of them that you are going to be out of work. Still not sure how I thought of this idea. It was probably my wife. I said, I just can't do that. It's going to be really hard to do. So somehow I came up with the thought of, let's get all 100 in a room, because nobody knows who's getting laid off, and let's all sign a piece of paper that says, for as long as you will be doing this layoff, we will all take 10 or 15% off our check. So we all,
wow.
So the idea was keep 100 people at 85%, because nobody knew who I was going to choose to say you're out of work. And that's probably the proudest moment. 100 out of 100 people signed that to take a 15% or 10% pay cut. I presented it to Bill Timmons, who was a fantastic guy, the president of the Aladdin. And he accepted it. And it wasn't long before Vegas bounced back. So it was maybe a paycheck or two. And we didn't have to lay anybody off. And it's probably the proudest thing I've ever done. To be able to, and it was, I was like the last one. So the other ones had already been done and I didn't really know until the night before. And I didn't really share it with anybody. So everybody else, well, how come Bruce isn't laying people off? Well, Bruce is laying people off, but he's laying them off while they're still here and taking that amount of people we had to lay off everybody's paycheck, obviously, including mine. And that's a moment I'll always remember.
That's an incredible story. Just incredible.
Yeah.
Okay,
moment.
Great. Let's great stuff. Let's move on to another call here. Go 1 sec. Great questions. Hello, this is Tino Magnetta. You have a question for Bruce Howard.
Yeah, hey Tino, wonderful show. Great to hear Bruce live and all the different stories, and certainly a lot of those are from Vegas and the sports and business community, and you know, in that respect, he mentioned, you know, the Jerry Lewis Telethon, obviously a great community endeavor. You know, ask Bruce, you know, in San Diego at Valley View, what kind of sports and business and community outreach do they do at that property?
Well, I appreciate that question, and for full transparency, I didn't know Steve was going to call in, but that was Steve Beckbar, the director of the local ALS chapter, who has really devoted his life to the cause of ALS. Steve and I know each other for quite a few years. We both live up here in Valley Center. He was the assistant athletic director at both SDSU and San Diego, and took on this challenge with ALS 5 or 6 years ago, and fortunate enough to call me, Bruce, we have this one big fundraiser a year, and we're looking for a place. And I said, how about us? And he said, absolutely. And while we do small donations to many, many, many causes, the ALS Foundation is near and dear to our heart. And Steve, I think, will tell everybody he's never received the support from one organization, because they did this dinner before they came here. And when he does it here, you get the entire company behind you. So, I mean, we have food and beverage people, promotions people, casino people who can't wait for this event. I mean, it is a humbling event to see all these folks come in thanking us for putting on a nice dinner for them. We do it out by the pool, and then we go into the banquet room. So our number one outreach is ALS. It's certainly a horrific disease, and it has no limitations, and it's no preference on anybody. And the stories that Steve tells me, we're still good friends today, how sometimes families get two or three or four people, and it's not hereditary. I mean, some of the stories around the country of these brave people, and you see them at our event every year, and it's amazing how upbeat, respectful, kind, spending their life, in a wheelchair, just can't wait for the next event, and thank you so much. And that's, I think, something our entire company is proud of. Our board of directors is entirely behind it. Everybody in the company is behind it. It's always, I believe, ALS month every May. So we tend to do this event in May as part of ALS Awareness Month. And I think it's no secret that Steve Fisher, the famous basketball coach from San Diego State, is a big contributor. His son, Mark, is afflicted with ALS, just the nicest people in the world. So ALS will always hold a special place for us. I have a very dear friend in Houston who's been battling ALS, so appreciate the call in, Steve.
Thank you.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much for everything. Thank you. All right, that's great. What a great cause. Some
yes.
Mania. Hello, this is Tino Magnetta. Do you have a question for Bruce Howard? I just wanted to say hello. Hello, do you have a question for Bruce Howard? Yes.
Can you guys hear me?
We can hear you now. Yes.
Sorry about that. I was listening. I'm multitasking here in my old age. How are you guys?
Good,
great.
Good.
Good. I don't usually say who I am, but I'm going to tell you because I got a story about the Rain Man Suites. Is that okay if I tell a story?
Absolutely.
I've been loving hearing about the old Vegas. I moved to Vegas in 1980 after college and been there most of my life since. In 1990, you probably know them. Do you remember Murray Guinness from the casino?
Of course. Vice chairman of the company, Murray and his brother.
Right. So they were from Cleveland, and my family was from Cleveland, and my parents used to have a restaurant in Las Vegas, and Murray and Leona ate there probably once a week. And so I was getting married on Thanksgiving weekend, and I had a good job on the Strip, but in those days, having a good job and making a lot of money weren't necessarily one and the same. So I asked Mr. Guinness if I could get a room rate, you know, for a room for my wedding night. And he said, of course. So we got married and we went, my wife and I, you know, went to Caesars and we checked into this beautiful room. It had the mirror over the bed and a beautiful shower and the big tub and everything. And I was so happy. But the door to the adjacent room was open. So we went in there, and I don't remember which floor it was, but it was one of those suites that had the double staircase and the two rooms on top, and I'm sure you know what I'm talking about, right? So
the rooms,
I was freaking out. I'm like, get out of here, we're going to get in trouble just for being in here. And Jody called down at the front desk, and she goes, you know, we're in 416, and, you know, 415 is open, and they go, oh, that's for Mr. Manfredi. So they had put us in that room for our wedding night, and it was just a spectacular surprise.
So is that Manfredi from The Limelight?
It may well be. Yes, it is.
How
are you?
I know the Manfredi family very well. Maury and The Limelight was a famous restaurant in Vegas owned by the Manfredis.
Yep, well, that's my family. That's my sister. We just celebrated a milestone birthday that we won't discuss right now. But, yeah, so – We were just so excited to be in a room like that.
Are you Vince McCready?
I'm Vince.
Okay, hi, Vince. We know each other. Hey, I ate at the restaurant all the time.
I know.
Yeah, you're a first-class marketing guy. I know Maury for years. Nice family. Good to talk to
you. Thank you. Nice to talk to you. I just want to react, I guess. I've been in and out of Vegas. When I started working with Acres and then IGT, I was working everywhere. And I saw a little bit from a distance Vegas just continue to mushroom and grow. And, you know, the number of rooms, what is it, 70,000 now or whatever the number is. You know, I feel like you can't scale first class or quality service to the level, you know, to the size that some of the properties are now. And it's always been a little, sad, you know, to see. My son was just telling me, you know, everything changes, Dad, you know, don't worry about it. But it has changed, and I don't know necessarily for the better, although probably from the bottom line, the more people, et cetera. And Vegas certainly has an amazing ability to reinvent itself. But I just think from a service perspective, there has been, a substantial, deterioration. One exception would be a customer that I'm working with right now through IGT, and that is the Wynn organization. I think you referenced Mr. Wynn earlier in the program. And I'm actually in the middle of a long engagement with them, and I can't mention, competitors, but I can tell you that from my experience, the quality of the guest experience is really what drives that organization. It's probably a strong legacy of Mr. Wynn. And from listening to you talk about Valley View, it sounds like you're emulating that same sort of style. And I think it's an important part of what we do. And I just wanted to say, thank you for that work. I think it's where we need to remember that it's the guest, that pays our paycheck, and, taking good care of them, I think, is critical. And I think that gets lost in some of these monster properties.
No doubt about it. Well said. I mean, the Wynn is a first-class operator.
One of the things that Vince remembers that experience when he got married, probably 30 years ago, it's what you were talking about. It's an experience and a moment in time that you will never forget. And Vince brought that up, and he's never forgotten. That is the one thing that he'll always remember. And that's what it's about, right, Bruce?
Absolutely. I mean, we have no control over a gaming side. We would never let a guest of Caesars leave angry. And we do our best here. I mean, obviously, Vince is 100% right. It's hard to scale 1,200 rooms into 70,000 rooms. I would personally happen to agree that Wynn did it at the Mirage and the Bellagio. Others are getting close again. I think, the Aria, Cosmo, a lot of the Caesars properties are getting better again. But he's right. It was then, and this is now, and the service is pretty good. And probably as good as it can probably be for 70,000 rooms, but Caesars wasn't driven by the bottom line. That wasn't what made them stay up at night. Do we get the repeat guests?
Yeah.
Over time, the gaming will work itself out. It wasn't a day-to-day, week-to-week, quarter-to-quarter EBITDA company. That's not who they were. They just did it in a different way. That he is right. It can't be done this way because 3-4 companies own the whole city, and you can't do that when you have 10 or 12 or 14 or 40 casinos. Caesars was a standalone, even though there were 5 others, but Caesars Palace operated differently than the rest of the company. And at the end of the year, everybody got a nice return, and we made our money, but we never worried about it during the year. And you can't do that now if you're with a company. So he's right. I don't know the answer to how to get around that.
No, I don't think that, scaling and really going more mass market is it's certainly the right thing to do in terms of growing a business and creating happy shareholders. But in terms of a, 5-star, resort experience, I think it's difficult. I have one more comment that just happened a couple of months ago. I had been working, as I said, with Wynn, and it was my time to get back in front of the group and say, okay, here's what we think you need to do. And so, we had been preparing this for a couple of months, and I was the, presenter. And we were meeting at 10 a.m., and I was putting on my shirt at 9:15, and it happened to have a French cuff, which I hardly ever wear, and I had no cufflinks. And so I started freaking out, and then, which is what I like to do, and I called the concierge. To make a long story short, in 15 minutes, I had cufflinks knocking on my door, from the concierge. And I'm sorry to say that I don't know that that experience would have been repeated in too many of the other places in town right now. And it's just another example. And it makes sense that it's not necessarily possible, but it is those moments, I think, that make the difference and keep people coming back. And I'm glad that at least I got to taste some of that in the early part of my career.
Please say hello to Maury for me and tell her I said my best. What a nice sister you have.
Thank you. She looks great. She does CrossFit like a week, and she looks better. She looks fantastic. She's doing well. And she's a grandma now.
For hardworking F&B people. So I haven't seen her in 25 years, but please tell her hello.
I will. Thank you, guys. And thank you so much. Have a great night.
All right.
Vince. Thanks, Vince. Really appreciate it. Thank you.
You bet. Take care. Bye-bye.
Yeah, he remembered that Caesar's experience. He'll never forget that. Let's go to the next caller. Hello, this is Tino Magnata. Do you have a question for Bruce Howard?
Hello, I think so. How are you guys?
Good, good.
Good, good, good. Again, another outstanding show, Tino. And Bruce, I'm wondering, is this an episode of This Is Your Life? It sure seems like it. Everybody's coming up and they all know you, and it's, I'm old enough to remember the show. I'm not sure if anybody else I'm relating right now, but this is like your life, and I don't even know you, and I'm sitting here smiling through this whole thing. It's great.
And just tell you the stories you told me at dinner. I said, well, you ask me whatever you like.
There you
go. I've gotten a T-Rock here or there, but
there you go.
Enjoyed 34 years in this business. Every day really is a comedy.
Where were you raised? Where were you raised?
I was raised in a small town on the north end of Miami Beach called Surfside, Florida.
Wow.
My father basically had two careers. He owned a liquor store and bar for 20 years, then became a stockbroker for 25 years. And my mother was a state of Florida social worker for 40 years.
My two brothers and sister
are still there, and as I said, when the restaurants in South Florida closed, we moved to Vegas, and I'm so glad we did, because people don't believe me when they ask me what my hobby is. I tell them the casino business. It's just intriguing, and it's just interesting, and it's just a business that Terry Lanny really made us all fall in love with, and I've enjoyed a career in it. It's like working, as I said, at Caesars, we always felt it was like getting paid to go to Harvard and get an education. So grew up in Florida and have spent time in six different states traveling around the riverboats and Las Vegas Strip, and now settled in San Diego the last 15 years, and my wife and I and her sister have enjoyed every minute of it.
Well, you have a energy and a passion in your voice that's breathtaking. And I think for anybody – and it's interesting because I believe we're having a transition. We've had a transition in who the new staff is that's hired. They're used to a McDonald's drive-thru as opposed to going and having lobster as kids. When I was a kid, my dad would sit down and have a martini, and I'd have a couple sips, and I'd go, man, I don't know what this hell is, but I'm ready to run a mile. But it's just a whole different genre. So getting them to understand the word service and what service is, it's one thing to do it. It's another thing to deliver it with the passion that you have. And I know, I remember in the 70s as a young, I'm in the music business and have been an artist, agent, and a manager, going out there in my 20s, mid-20s, and thinking, man, this is the French Riviera. It was that vibe. It was like, oh, man, I got to leave my sport coat on because this place is too cool. And it, and now it has changed, and everything has changed. It's casual now. I wear a sport coat, and people wonder if I'm if I own the place or if I'm on the take or something. But anyway, in what you're doing, I mean, I'm just knocked out. I was told you were outstanding by a friend who's heard of you and knows you, and he said, you've just got to hear him talk. Bruce is amazing. And thank you for what you do and the passion that you have. It is unbelievable, and it shows what your family's background is with the things that you do. As you described what your father did, he was a hardworking guy, and he focused on doing the best he could for his family and wound up having a passion for what he's doing, and then your mother did the same. And so the apple doesn't fall far. So
I appreciate that. We were raised right, and I couldn't have asked for two better parents or two better brothers and sisters. We're all hardworking, and we like what we do, and I really appreciate those comments. And well, I'm one of the fortunate few who loves what he does. It's just
well, and you won the lottery with the right wife.
Yes. You are right on the money. I've enjoyed every day of 36 years, every day.
I relate to it completely, and we did 46 this year, so exactly.
Just wanted to say that.
Thank you. Pardon?
Yes, sir.
Take care. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Have a nice night. Mm-hmm. Bye-bye. Excellent. Let's move on to the next caller. Hello, this is Tina Magnetta. Do you have a question for Bruce Howard?
Hello.
Hello.
Hi, this is Heather Lee with Atriant, and I just wanted to say thank you to you, Bruce. Hi, for sharing so many wonderful stories. I've really enjoyed the show thus far. And my question was, what was the best meal you made for a customer or a celebrity personally?
The best meal we ever made anywhere?
Yes.
I'm going to go back to, if all of you are in Las Vegas, you know the Tobin family, who spent every New Year's with us. Dan, unfortunately, passed away. Carolyn and Josh and their daughter are all good friends of ours. And every year they would come up to the Palace Court and have dinner on New Year's Eve for about 12 people. And we had Arnaud Briand as Palace Court chef, and Bruce said, I don't want to know what we're eating. Tell Arnaud to do his thing. And the food that came out those New Year's Eve for the Tobin family, I felt like I was feeding my best friends and my family. So you name it, and they were not necessarily fancy eaters. They eat like all the rest of us, but just a spectacular night of good wine and good food and friends. And as far as for the actual food, I'm going to go back again to Caesars. We did an Opus tasting, Opus 1, their 10-year anniversary. So we had all 10 years of Opus red wine, which is a pretty famous one. And they brought in all their executives. And now for that one, you talk about a decadent dinner with caviar and the finest lobster and everything. So I'm going to point to the Tobin family, still great friends of ours, is a fantastic meal every year, and this once-in-a-lifetime Opus tasting. So on the table were the first 10 years of Opus 1, so it was a 10-course meal. We worked with their winemaker to pair a special course with each of the years, you know, and it was that's probably one I'll never forget either. As far as a decadent, rich, opulent meal, that's the one that comes to mind first, but that's a great question.
Well, you've had an incredible life in gaming, and I appreciate you sharing all these stories with us. It's been really incredible.
Thank you, Heather. That's very nice of you. And
thank you,
Bruce. Thanks, Heather. Thanks for calling in.
Thank you, Tino.
No problem. You have a great night.
You as well.
Okay, great question.
Yeah.
Best meal ever. Wow, I wasn't expecting that one. How about you? It's a good one.
Oh,
all right,
I like that one.
Here.
I don't know what that Opus tasting was probably 89 or 90, somewhere in there. And that was a night. Boy, we enjoyed that one because obviously there's always half bottles left of every Opus year. So at the end of the night, we we're all done. Everybody's drinking Opus 1. We couldn't afford Opus 1 back then, so we're drinking 10 years of Opus 1, the Palace Court Tap, and me.
That's amazing. Let's go to the next caller. You're lighting it up over here. Everybody's calling in.
Great.
Hello, this is Tino Magnetta. You have a question for Bruce Howard?
Hello, Tino.
Oh, maybe they... Yeah.
Hey, Tino, can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
Hey, great call, guys.
Thank you.
Hey, Bruce.
It's yes.
Obvious you have a commitment to guest service. I was reading your letter on your website. Great letter. And you've had such a great background. And a few of the callers touched on it. With the commitment to service that you have, and everyone strives for that, do you find it harder now, or was it harder back in the day? It seemed like back in the day, more people got it, but it seems like now everyone's, you know, being aware of it and trying to attain it. But do you think it's harder now or harder back then? And if so, what is the challenge?
The challenge, obviously, is finding 900 people like we've been able to have here at Valley View Casino and Hotel.
Exactly.
We're in the middle of a big $50 million expansion that'll all open up July 1st. We're adding a lot of gaming space and all that. But we have a team of leaders that pride themselves on honesty and integrity. And that's what I think made Caesars, and that's what makes good service. You don't have to be pretentious with guests, and you don't have to try to fool anybody. If you honestly care that they've chosen your casino, which we did at Caesars, which we did at all the other stops, and we certainly do at Valley View, with the number one gaming right down the street, then the service will come across to guests as honest and sincere, and that's really all you need. If you care, it will be okay if you make a mistake. But if you really care about a guest, you'll probably walk them to the restroom and not point. You'll probably go out to their machine and teach them how to get their free play going and not just try to explain it over a counter. So there's no secret to excellent service. It's finding the leaders who believe in it, finding 900 team members who want to do it, like we had 3,000 at Caesars. And I honestly wouldn't call it any harder or easier in 2018 than it was in 1985. It's just a question of hire right. That's what I've told people. My job description is two words, hire right. If you hire right and you try to set a little bit of an example, you'll find leaders and vice presidents and directors and managers like we have here. And they're as good as anywhere on the strip. I think sometimes Indian gaming gets a little misperception, but I would have no hesitation at all with taking this group with me and running Caesar's Palace or Bellagio. I welcome everybody who's been shy about going to an Indian casino to come by. Say hello to me. Let me know how we're doing and form your own opinions. It's a first-class experience. It's friendly. It's down home. The only difference here, we dress in polo shirts. At Caesar's back then, I had 60 white shirts in my closet because you didn't dare wear a blue one or a black one, and you better wear a dark suit on the weekends. And here, a nice pair of slacks and a Valley View polo shirt because that's what the guests of Southern California want. So service is the key to our business here. Your question is spot on. It's just finding the right people who believe what you believe. That's all.
Great. Thanks. Great call.
Yes.
Thank you, Jacques. Appreciate it. Okay. Let's see here. I think we've got time for one more. Hello, this is Tino Magnetta. Do you have a question for Bruce Howard?
Hey, Bruce. Tino, this is Bobby in Las Vegas.
Hi.
Hey, Bobby.
Great show. I really enjoyed the stories from the old days and the current days. I know we're running short on time, so I'll just ask two little quick questions and I'll hang up and listen. After all these years, you can hear the passion in your voice and your results just speak for themselves. I think everybody's happy except maybe the lobster community, which has been slightly decimated by your tenure at Valley View.
Good point.
what continues to motivate you every morning at this point in your career? And And I, what you've done for ALS is fantastic. Is there anything else that you're particularly proudest of at this juncture with what's going on at Valley View? And thanks.
I'm proud of a lot of things, and the motivation is easy. I don't feel I would do anything for myself anymore. So every email, every phone call, I think of my parents. I think of the 185 owners, the San Pasquale tribe who has taken me and my wife and my family in. As, you know, people say, what's it like working for a tribe? I mean, it's been the greatest experience of my life. These people are as friendly or more than Terry Lanny and Henry Gluck. So the motivation is easy. The opportunity given to me has been phenomenal, and my payback is to make sure at some point in the next 5 or 10 years, whenever that is, that when I move on, I leave the place better than I found it. And the only way to do that is just do it every day and don't get too complicated. Just stay with the cleanliness and friendliness. Find people like Joe Navarro, Al Cope, Judy Wright, the board of directors that I sit on. There's a board of directors probably in most of the 60 Native American casinos in California. Ours is the only one that has myself, Leilani Marquez, our CFO, and Jim Caceres, the tribe CFO, sitting on our board of directors as full-fledged voting members, and we are not associated with the tribe. We are not tribal members. So the confidence.
Wow.
That has been shown to me is what motivates me every day. I don't want to let anybody down. I want to do this right and leave out at some point in the next 5 or 10 years, making a mark that lasts for at least another 28 years. We just signed a new gaming compact, which means a gaming agreement with the state for another 28 years of gaming here on our reservation. So we're just getting started. The first 18 went pretty quick. We got at least 28 more to go and probably 28 more after that. So I enjoy mentoring and coaching and really just trying to lead by example and set a tone for the next 28 years.
That's fantastic. Bruce, that's amazing. You guys are basically pioneers in that area. I've never heard of, non-natives being on a board, but it makes so much sense. You know, now you're getting into like real business, right?
Yeah, our tribe figured it out 14 years ago. We got 5 tribal members, also Jenny and Anthony. In addition, Joe Navarro is our president, Al Cope's our vice president, all the rest of us are board members. And 3 of us of the 8 are non-tribal members with the same rights, the same voting, and that's been one of the keys to our success. The corporation was started in 2003 and really went full-fledged in 2004, and very smart tribal members here. They decided we want a gaming entity that's different than all the tribal business. So everything reports up to the tribe, but the casino has been carved out with the 8 of us being in charge of the casino operation. It's really made for quicker decisions, a little more efficiency. Everybody's right here all the time. The president and vice president work in the 2 offices next to me. The board meets every week. We make decisions. I take it into our meeting on Tuesday after our board meeting on Monday. Then I have my meeting every Tuesday morning with our 6 directors and 8 vice presidents, and we keep moving forward. And it's
beautiful,
efficient, and it really works well.
That's amazing. Incredible. Thank you so much, Bobby. That was a good question. Yeah. Bruce, before we sign off, and we've gone over, we still have so many callers, but we're going to have to do another show in the new year. So before we sign off, give us a little overview. I know you guys are doing some great things over there. Tell us a little bit what's going on moving into July 1st. What are you doing over there?
That's currently planned as our grand opening. We're adding 44,000 square feet of gaming and restaurant and bar space to our current 100,000. So we're growing the casino operation and food and beverage basically by 44%. We have then a complete refurbishment will be the last month of the expansion, where we bring everything in the current casino up to the level of the new casino. So parts of the new casino will open in May and June. but we really want to save our grand opening announcement and party until July when everything has been done. And it's all in the front of the building, but seamless. Our operation still runs every day. There's really no negative impact. After you do a lot of construction, which we've done here and I've done my whole life, and a lot of expansions, you learn how to do it, that it's just a win-win. So the property is running just fine right now while we expand right out the front. We created a whole new entrance that we actually made more convenient for our guests. And, yeah, I invite everybody down between now and then, but anybody coming after July 1st will see, our labor of love come to life.
That's fantastic. Bruce, to say that this has been an incredible hour of amazing conversation to me tonight is an understatement. It's been an incredible show. You have such a love and passion for the business. And, it all started back in the day with the shanty and especially Caesar's Palace. And really appreciate you being on the show. And we'll have you back before the open, definitely, because I know a lot of people didn't get a chance to ask questions tonight, but we'll give it another round. Thank you so much, Bruce.
Anytime. I appreciate the opportunity. I probably ran on a little too long, so maybe we'll do more questions next time. I like hearing what everybody has as a question. That was a fun part of the show. But, yeah, my gaming career has been very, very fortunate and very appreciative for it. And the group here in San Diego has been just like the crowning moment to a career that spread around the country. My wife and I love it here. Our grandkids are just down the street in Las Vegas. Our son is a high school robotics teacher at Basic High. His beautiful wife is a stay-at-home mom and online teacher. And I think that's the original high school in Las Vegas. So Mark's done an incredible job with his students. And he recently won the Nevada State Championship for robotics and went to Louisville, Kentucky to play in the World Championships. So we're quite proud of him.
Wow, that's incredible.
Yeah, he's
that's
a great
boy. Stuff.
Yep.
So you'll come back before the opening, and for those
anytime.
Of you who didn't get a chance to ask Bruce any questions, we'll pick it up then. Bruce, thanks so much, and we'll see you again.
Or send me an email. I like emails all day. Send anything you want to bhoward@valleyviewcasino.com. I'll be happy to talk with you, write to you, whatever I can do to help.
That's great. Thanks so much, Bruce. You have a great night.
Yeah, Tina, I appreciate it. Thank you.
Oh, no problem. Thanks. Wow, that was fantastic. Bruce has incredible stories. And you know what? We didn't even hear all of them. You know, some of the stuff, cleanliness and friendliness and the Caesar stories. And, oh, man, I really had a good time tonight, and I'm sure all you out there did too. Monday, November 8th, which is Monday coming out, I have Mark Bertha, who's the president of Hard Rock International. He's incredible. He's got some great stories, and he talks about how certain things have been in his life influenced him. You're going to love this guy. Very articulate, very down-to-earth, humble beginnings, and it's going to be great. Remember, everybody has a story to tell. You just have to have time to listen to it. You all have a great night, and God bless.